James Court, Reel 4.
Now, we were talking about when you went out on the invasion force. You'd gone on the LST. And what was morale like amongst the lads?
We were an American board. American LST, well, American seal, American captain. It was a great fiesta. And we were learning about the date of the 9th and 10th. We got there about 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock in the morning. We were there trying to get in. And the Hampshires went in. They took a bit of a hump in late. And then we made 4 or 5 attempts. We were getting from the air, getting machine guns at night.
This is at Salerno.
These Yankee sealers, they never let them go. They held all the way in.
What could you see of the Hampshires going in?
Well, you could see the seals going in, and then you could see all the guns and that all firing. You couldn't see very much of that. See, it wasn't quite full daylight, but you could see a lot of them lying on the beach, Hampshire, Green Beach.
That was where you were going to land as well, was it? And what do you remember of the first? You said there was a couple of attempts to get ashore.
Yeah.
What happened?
Messerschmitts bombing and machine gun, and they blew an ammunition ship up in an oil tanker right next to where we were coming in, where we around them. And we eventually did get in, like.
So it wasn't that the men tried to land, it was that the ship had the to ship veer away.
Yeah, the ship couldn't get in. But we eventually did get in. And by this time, the Hampshire had cleared the beach of the thing. So just pockets of resistance, which the Durham's went into there, like you see. And then I was sent back to get everyone back with the boat. So let me get back with the boat and fetch it when I need some great things.
Had you got wet getting ashore?
Oh,
How close in did they get you?
About 100 yards. I was, you know, what I was up here.
On your tummy, that.
And then, of course, as it happened later on, I got further in the LCT, you see, but I had just dropped them there to get you out. Being open to further fire, you see.
So they'd moved in by the time you got back.
They moved in by the time we got back, right?
And
the beach was away then, you see.
Was the beach still under fire when you landed?
Oh, yeah.
What from?
From 88 shells. There was very little small arm fire, but mostly shelling and bombing.
And were there many casualties on the actual landing?
Oh, quite a few, yeah.
From the Durhams, I mean?
No, we hadn't so many, but the Hampshires took a hold of them. They were the first ones, did you say, the Hampshires? It was a full brigade of them.
The 46th Division Hampshire Brigade, you mean?
No, they were the 78th. 78th Division. The Battle Axe Division.
So, you went back for your bike?
Yeah, then we've got thrown alive with other bushes, so the green veins. And, yeah.
So you were eating them?
Lay there for a couple of hours, and then we've got all the rest of them move out. Along the road down, after we entered Salerno town. About 6 or 7 miles. The road was getting shelled the whole time, of course. There's one or two casualties there.
Were you doing in any? I mean, were you doing in dispatch riding, or were you just?
Oh yes, I was doing. I was sent around all the hospitals, getting lists of casualties from Durham's, you know, fetching all our lists back and reporting back to the headquarters, and then I was going. Taken from that, he can't go to the headquarters just back there because I'm not sure from you see, and we know different little villages where the companies was in, and back and forward. And, they're getting shelled, as I see the roads are getting shelled all the time. If you're finding any byways, you know, you hadn't got use of the maps then, but then you found a byway and you used them on the main road, right? But I haven't got around to do with the maps in the area there.
With the noise of the bike, could you hear when a shell was coming?
Oh, yes, yeah, you could.
And what method, how were you meant to get off the bike without hurting yourself? It sounds difficult.
Well, you slowed your brake rapidly, you threw the bike that way, and you went up.
So, like, you throw it that to the left and you dive to the right, or vice versa?
Vice versa, whichever bend of the road you're on.
Soon after you landed, you were attached to headquarters company?
Headquarters. Headquarters company, because this factory, they were using that many. You go down different companies in different places, you see, it was in there, that was job, and they didn't send the lads out too much to this factory, you know. We sent them one day in the first year, and then you sent another one the next day, you see. And as I say, it was touch and go when we were in Salerno.
So you moved forward along this road until you got to Salerno. And then
it took Salerno easy enough, but it was going past Salerno, which was the first place we took, the first called Copa di Cava.
Now, before that, there was trouble on a thing called Hospital Hill on the left of the road coming out.
All this was at the same time. Hospital Hill, it was a hell of a job at Hospital Hill. It was touch and go whether we were going to retire us from Salerno.
Whether you get thrown off or get right off. Were you aware of that at the time?
Yeah, we were all aware at the time. That's why Hospital Hill was such a crucial battle for the Dunes.
And what would you be doing during that? You'd be going backwards and forwards?
But then I was back with the anti-tank. Then they were taking the anti-tank forward up to Hospital Hill.
So if when things were busy, the headquarter company would use it, was it the anti-tank platoon, not company?
Anti-tank platoon.
Which would be part of the headquarters company. So they'd call you in if they needed it. So what exactly would happen on a typical message, and what kind of message would it be, say, when you were the anti-tank platoon?
Well, if that wireless set was out of commission, and it couldn't get through by field phone, send a dispatcher. Now, if it was urgent, you had your blue and white, see?
Blue and white, what? Sorry.
Badge.
Round your arm.
This badge, and dispatcher. And when the military police seen it, they give you priority, you see. They get through the same company immediately. Say, so there's that commander, give him that, the dispatcher, and make a verbal message.
If you had a verbal message, would you write it down yourself, or you were expected to remember it? Would there be any reason why it would be one or the other, written or verbal?
It depends how fast they wanted the message to get. The speed was essential, you think. For example, you would say to me and say, change your plan. The plan he gave you for attacking that cruise here is out. You know, would allow the UL, you know, something like that.
So that would be very urgent.
Right, very urgent. And then you've lost where there's contact. Try and get it, or get one from someone else to contact headquarters, you see, and give you further details and things like that.
And how fast would you go?
As fast as your bike would allow you.
And what would that be, realistic?
70 was very fast on the bike then, and then blew it.
But you'd get up to that speed? Did you not have accidents?
Oh, there were quite a few accidents. I didn't have any that happened, but there were a lot of accidents.
It was dangerous to go at that speed on them roads. What were the roads like for bikes?
Well, actually the main roads was all right, but the side roads where the companies were in was just like rubber roads, you know, gravel paths.
So would the main roads be metalled as well?
They were metalled on the main road, yeah.
But on the side, just tracks?
Some cobbles. The village has cobbled streets, which is dangerous.
So you wouldn't be able to go at 70 on them roads?
Oh,
would you?
No. Just,
what would you be doing then?
35, 40.
And that was, you couldn't go any faster?
Couldn't go any faster. Just impossible.
Was there much trouble with mud, or was it wet? Or?
Oh, an awful lot of it. An awful lot of trouble with mud. At least I have a friend right over here. Point skates. So what, I couldn't get into it, and that was the best thing in the world for it, was a French lady, dangling from it. It's amazing how it kept it out there. Kicks a lot of things out.
Was there any other tips, you know, to keep the bike going?
Well, the main was to keep it dry, if you could, your points and your engine dry, like your spark plug dry, like, you always carry a spare spark plug in your pocket, and a spanner.
Were they mechanically reliable, the bikes? Well, they were Norton still, were they?
Norton was the best bike for cross-country world it ever was.
What was so good about them?
Well, you've got your grip and you could go cross-country, side bar, and you could pull it up a hill, up a mountain. They'd drive up a mountain with Norton. The VSA was a good road bike. But on cross-country, the Norton was tied up. The Triumph was too low in the sump. If you come across a jagged wood and hit a rock and you'd have a cracked sump. A Matchless was a lovely bout of telegraph spin. Lovely for road walk. The Norton was the one for hard walk. It was the horse, the donkey in
it. So it was more powerful. And you say it had a better grip. What do you mean? The handlebars?
Yeah, you had a better grip. Yeah, for a tour of it. You were riding the bike. The bike wasn't riding you. It's a great army bike.
They were mechanically reliable. I mean, given that you kept them dry and
very reliable.
Had you been trained at all in sort of first aid to bikes? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you had 7 tasks.
What were they?
You had a task every day, you see, on your bike. Yeah, number one task was your engine. You examined your engine the first day. And the second day, you examined all your oil and fluid and change them. The third day was your light and your ignition switch light. And the fourth day was your wheels. And it went on day by day at a separate task. And if you did them tasks every day, well, your bike was always in good condition. And then periodically, the fitter came and he did a test on it for you. And he'd overhaul it, you know, whatever. So, but he could tell straight away if you hadn't been doing your tasks. Then you were falling apart.
Were there any things that would go wrong, you know, that despite the 7 tasks would just go wrong? What did you do about that?
Again, the Norton had the ideal system. It was ideal. They had a back wheel, you lifted your flap, your mudguard flap, lifted it over. Your back wheel, you have 3 studs. You loosened them 3 studs. Your chain stayed there. You loosened the 3 studs. And then you whipped your bike over and pulled the wheel out. Lifted your bike back. And you had your wheel out without screwing anything else up. You just took your tail off, changed your puncture, whipped your wheel back, blew it up, screwed it up again.
So you'd changed the inner tube?
Oh, yeah.
It was an inner tube system on their bikes?
You'd mend it with a puncture about it. You'd mend it yourself.
You wouldn't have a spare inner tube then?
No.
So that could take that could take time?
Oh, it could do it in 5 minutes.
Even with putting the patch on everything.
Yeah.
If you were on a really urgent message, could you ride them with a flat tyre or would you have to change it?
No, there was no run flats then. The run flats came out later on. What they call run flats, you could ride it so far with a flat tyre, but if you rode them with a flat tyre, a couple of 100 yards, yes, but then your tyre would weigh and go off and you'd just be riding on metal. You just couldn't do it.
Would that ruin your rims?
Aye. The bike.
It was just impossible to I mean, if you had a flat, yeah. Until the run flats came on, you had to stop and mend it, no matter how urgent the message. Would they ever send more than one ride? I mean, if it was an important message and you were going into a rough area.
Oh, yeah, they would probably send a route following you.
Just to make sure.
Yeah. Well, I've been sent a route before, and she had somebody else.
Now, so that was a sort of routine of your job. Go back into it. Hospital Hill. Were there any particular things you remember about Hospital Hill and then Corpo de Carva? That was the.
Well, Corpo de Carva was a
Hospital Hill.
It was a hell of a fight, but as I say, I was mostly with anti-tank on the outskirts of the battle. I wasn't actually in Hospital Hill about it. I wasn't actually in it. But it was our old friend's Eamon Gorham regiment that was there. We had them in North Africa. We had them in 90th Light.
And what were the anti-tank guns doing during the battle? They were just to the side.
And showing that no German tanks came down, right?
From the hill or down the road?
Down from the hill. Down past Hospital Hill.
So that was the first thing, and then the move to Corpo de Carva. Now that was quite a big thing. What do you remember of that?
was for. We took up any car like easy enough, but it was then the spur in front of it when I had a very job to get.
Cockerood's the spur, would that would be it, yeah.
Yeah, Cockerood's the spur, yeah. I've got quite a power for to get that, like. And then they decided after that that the anti-tank platoon would be disbanded.
Now, before we go, do you remember anything about the battle on Cockerood's spur? As a dispatch rider, these wouldn't be battles to you. It would just be dangerous rides, would it?
Dangerous rides, yeah.
You weren't actually in the front line fighting ever.
Not at that time.
So to you, it would be difficult to remember because it was a matter of thing. So why did they disband the anti-tank platoon?
Because they had got 17-pound anti-tank guns. And they've got field regiments of anti-tank gunners out. And they say that the pig guns that we had were no good.
No good for anything.
No good. So they just disbanded the anti-tank platoon. And I got sent then as a company dispatch rider. With a company.
And which company were you sent to?
B.
How many would the dispatch riders would there be with B company?
One.
You were it. So there'd be the headquarters dispatch riders.
Signal dispatch rider, that's headquarters.
But you were the company one, so.
And there was four company ones.
One each. And who was your officer in B company?
The first one I went on was Captain. The company commander was Major Johnson, so he had been wounded, and his captain was in charge of it, and I joined him anyway.
And you just remember, well, we can look it up later, his name was Jimmy something.
Aye.
And did you have to work closely with the officers? I mean, would you be with them normally?
Yeah. When I went on advance regular at Taylor.
What would they ride?
Yeah, me and the bait.
How friendly did you get with them?
Oh, very friendly.
Would they call you by your first name, or was it?
Yeah.
And would you call them by their first name?
No.
But they treated you like a proper person, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. And, but I say the worst of being a company dispatch rider was you took them. Advanced recce, you took him on an advanced recce. If he was getting his jeep up there, he would go with his jeep, but you were in front, you know, you had the map and showed the way to go, so to say.
So even with the jeep, you'd have to go ahead of them?
Oh, yeah. And he'd take them there, and then he'd come back, and they'd maybe stay there, and you'd press the company up to a debusted area, which was safe from fire. Then you'd get them out, and then you'd have to lead them to where that. Separate area as well, you see. And then you were in the line with them then. You left your bike at the echelon nearby. You were in with them then.
So you guided them into the line.
And then you were part of the company.
What, back to being a rifleman in a sense.
Yeah. Then, when there was any messengers that go away, they were safe in their trenches, you had to get out and run back for your bike. Go back to AFBS, or maybe 30 or 40 miles away, and come back and make your way back in the trench again. And all of a sudden, they were probably resting. You weren't. You never had a rest.
You'd volunteered, you said, to get out of the trenches. I mean,
yeah,
did
I
you find.
Them.
How did you feel about that?
Ah, it was a bit more interesting. Just about the fact. You did get away from it at times, right?
Now, before we go on, we just had a look at the book, and it wasn't Cockerood's Spur, it was
La Crochelle,
which was near Corpo di Carpo, because that was the Garigliano, the Cockerood's Spur. That's my fault as much as anyone. Now, the next thing that really happened was there was, of the Volturna, what do you remember about that? Were you still with the, that was after the disbandment of the anti-tank platoon, was it?
Yeah.
So, How? What happened as far as you were concerned?
Well, we went to a little village. I think it was around 10 minutes. Well, the family was there today. And they were having a concert for when we don't get training. And we were supposed to be making a silent crossing. The domes. Jerry Preston's request for me to silent crossing. But further up, the Canchero, the fieldwoods to the left of us, the fieldwoods made a noisy crossing, and to the left. The left of us in reserve, waiting for us to get across. Well, it was a silent crossing, but we were halfway across, and when a lad fell in, and he skied his head off. When everything opened up, it was then like. And the last thing, we got across, and the noise from up by the Cancella was, you know, they were making a really noisy crossing there. But we got across, like, and instead of using the boats, the rest of the lads just waded across the volcano. They didn't bother with boats, just waded across. And
now, who did you go? Were you across in the first wave?
I was across on the motorbike, or across on the pontoon with the motorbike.
So you didn't cross with these first bunch of lads in the boat?
Yeah, I crossed on the pontoon, on the bridge, pontoon bridge. The lads were going across, and we were going across on the pontoon bridge and pulled across. And the carriers were going across too. I've got a friend with the big Durham book of Jim Kelly is in front of the carrier. He's going across on it, across the volcano. I see the book with him, he was there, lad. Well, the carrier driver was on the bridge with him, going across with him, Jim Kelly.
Did you come under much fire yourselves on the pontoon as it was pulled across?
Well, the whole river was getting bombed, but it never came near the pontoon after the flood.
So what happened when you got to the other side?
Well, we went to a farmhouse and Jerry was moving out then. So we were safe opposition, so the same, but took possession of this farmhouse. And then the rest of them came across and jumped in and
Did you have to go on any reconnaissance? I mean, with your officer when you landed? Proper patrols, not just. So you say you got hell and daylight. What was it like?
Continuous mortar, never work as a lot.
What was it like under a bombardment like that? What could you do?
Oh, you couldn't do anything, just sit and pray.
Did you, you dig in, I presume, or would you take over German? And slit trenches, like you described before, or had you learned?
Slit trenches, 6 foot by 3 foot, as deep as your leg.
Pretty well the same then. How long would it take you to dig something like that?
You should dig about an hour.
So as soon as you got over, would you start digging them?
Oh, you dug in every place you went. Every place you went. It's the first thing you do is dug yourself in.
So there was a bit of a stonk on the, what happened next?
Well, in the daytime we started attacking again, and by this time the battalion had been organised over headquarters, and everybody was over by then and organised again, and they started moving ahead towards their further objectives, which I believe was the regular Vigliano and Latino.
And do you remember anything about that in particular?
Vigliano,
I think there was the Tiano first.
Yeah.
What do you remember of that?
It was easy to cross those. Easy. Well, we went with anyway.
In what way?
Well, it was very little opposition and we never held up.
So nothing particularly you remember about that? So let's have a look at the Garigliano then, the crossing, well, the crossing and the fighting there. What do you recall of that?
Well, we crossed it, and we were one of the only ones that did cross it first time. But we got across and we were out on a limb. Till then they started digging and putting wire mesh roads down and across for the tanks. But the tanks seemed didn't want to come across. I don't know why, but they didn't want to come across. And they finally did come over, like, so to say. But we've got a foothold for them by this time. I mean, we had established, well established a hold. And Collins. Little Collins was doing a lot of patrol at that time.
Who?
Collins. Lieutenant Collins.
He was in your company?
Aye, the Brigadier, no.
What was he like?
Oh, he was a good little officer. He was sharp.
Would you go with him on any of these patrols?
Not that time, I didn't, no.
So, when you got across, there was this, the business of the, this was where the Cockeroos Spur and Mount Camino and Bear Arse Pillbox Spur. What do you remember of all that? I know it's a long time ago.
I remember Cockeroos Spur, and I remember going up Mount Camino under the, a little place called Rocker Station we took. We took it after a hell of a lot of fame. We left it to go back for the rest, and then lost it again in a couple of hours. It was a Leicester, I think, and lost it again in a couple of hours. Rock our station. And Jerry had tanks and everything there. But we had our own special name for all these places, you know what? Hangman Salem.
Sarah, do you remember any of the details of the fighting? What was happening to you?
What was happening to me?
Can you tell us about it?
Well, as I say, you were going in and attacking them, and they were throwing everything at you. But your motor was attacking them, and then you had the tanks behind you when you could get the tanks. But not, you couldn't get them when you climbed the hill climbing. And then you see these fellas enjoying hill climbing now. Made a claim from there. But, yeah, don't forget the bad times, you remember the good times.
You mean, you forget the bad times?
You forget them, you don't want to remember them. And, but, you slept when you could, always wet. And you were never hungry, you always had a couple of boxes up for you. But, you're always soaking wet. Water or sweat. And you just touch it, don't go to sleep anywhere. I slept in a barn and the rats was running over the top of it. Never, nobody ever moved. They didn't touch it.
So what's the next thing you remember?
Well, we got pulled out shortly after that.
That's when you went to the Middle East?
Went to the Middle East under Tobiensky.
What was the morale like in the battalion by then?
It was still good. It was still good. And that was a time, it was just about then, that Johnny Preston came round. Remember the mutiny at Salerno? With the 50th day.
I wanted to ask you about that, yes, because I believe you had some contact with them. Can you tell us that?
He was on the beach when he was interviewing them, Johnny Preston.
Can you tell us that whole story as much as you remember? Because people are interested in that one way or another.
Well, what happened was, the reinforcements was called for in Salerno because we took a bit of a back in there.
This is early on.
Aye, this is early on. And there was a 50th Battalion, the 50th Div, and came out to England to train for the invasion of France. Of course, we didn't know this at the time, but we knew that came out to England to train. So we wanted urgent reinforcements, and these lads that came out of hospital in the Middle East and all were in a transit camp. And of course, they banged them on the boat. They thought they were going home. And of course, they landed them at Salerno and they just mutinied on the beach. And one or two sergeants was ringleader. They just mutinied, you see. And of course, the military police came on and surrounded them.
About how many were there?
Pardon?
About how many of them?
Oh, it was a couple of hundred of them. Then our CEO was called down to them. Well, I was...
You're what?
You're Johnny Preston.
Preston, sorry.
Down to the beach to talk to him. Well, I was in Salerno itself, in headquarter company, and the quartermaster came out. And he says, get your bike, I want to go down to the beach.